Hey, Sal.
Hank, what's going on? We haven't worked a case in years.
I just bought my car at Carvana, and it was so easy. Too easy.
Think something's up?
You tell me. They got thousands of options.
Mm-hmm.
Found a great car at a great price.
Uh-huh.
And it got delivered the next day.
It sounds like Carvana just makes it easy to buy your car, Hank.
Yeah, you're right. Case closed.
Buy your car today on Carvana. Delivery fees may apply.
Reggie, I just sold my car online.
Let's go, Grandpa. Wait, you did?
Yep, on Carvana. Just put in the license plate, answered a few questions, got an offer in minutes. Easier than setting up that new digital picture frame.
You don't say.
Yeah, they're even picking it up tomorrow. Talk about fast.
Wow, way to go. So, about that picture frame.
Forget about it. Until Carvana makes one, I'm not interested.
Car selling made easy. On Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
Hi everyone, it's Gavin J, the best thing since hummus. And you're listening to the Therapy Suite right here on UKF Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. This week, I speak to lead multiple sclerosis clinical nurse specialist, Sarah White, and MS Trust CEO, David Martin. Sarah and David, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Doing very well, Gavin. Lovely to meet you.
Yes, and you. Thanks for asking us.
Thank you for coming on the show. It's lovely to meet you both too. I think it'll be good to hear a bit about both your backgrounds and how you kind of got to where you are today. So, Sarah, if we start with you, that'd be brilliant.
Yes, certainly. Well, I've been a multiple sclerosis clinical nurse specialist for 20 years now. And prior to that, I worked in a neuro rehab team in the community. And before that, I was a district nurse. So a lot of my background prior to specialist nursing in an acute trust was in the community.
Gosh, you've done loads. That's fantastic. And David, tell us a bit about you and your background.
Yeah, I've been the CEO at the MS Trust now for 6 years. But before that, I worked at a disability charity, leading disability charity called Papworth Trust. And before that, I was a reporter for the BBC in the east of England. So I had a wide and varied career.
I was going to say, that's fantastic. What did you used to report on?
Local government. I had to try and make local government interesting. It was like a bit like Mission Impossible, really.
Gosh, that's complex. It's a bit complex, isn't it? You have to understand the politics and everything.
Very, very challenging. This is much more interesting, Gavin.
Absolutely. I think that might have actually helped with what you do now, because charities no doubt need to deal with some people on the government level as well. Would that be right?
Absolutely. I've been in the last 12 months, I've been in 10 Downing Street, 11 Downing Street. You're trying to explain to politicians and their advisors what the challenges are and what the solutions might be at the same time. And sometimes it's not because they're daft, it's because they've got so many subjects they're trying to deal with. But you're trying to simplify things down and give them offer them the solutions that you and your charities are actually found. So I find that my communication skills have been really helpful in the charity sector.
That's fantastic. Do you know what? What you did before, it's kind of like it was meant to be, because it's helped you at this point now get to that point where you can really at a government level communicate with the real senior people to try and help the trust move forwards. Would that be right?
Something like that. Although I must admit, when I first started out on that journey, my first ever interview was the band U2. And my dad was always asking me when I was going to get a proper job. So I think I've finally got that proper job now.
Well, well done to you. And well done, Sarah. You both got some great background there, you know. Sarah, let's start with some of the, you know, give us a bit of a background into multiple sclerosis and what this means for people.
Yes, of course. So multiple sclerosis is a disease that affects the central nervous system. So that's the brain and spinal cord. And everyone's MS is different. Every week, around 130 more people are diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. And there are an estimated 130,000 people in the UK living with MS. And it's three times more common in women than in men. And most people are diagnosed in their 20s and 30s, but it can be diagnosed in younger and older people. So each new person who's diagnosed is entering a healthcare system with long waiting lists, specialist nurses with caseloads far exceeding sustainable numbers. And it's estimated that there is a national shortage of 149 MS nurses. So this is one of the reasons that the MS Trust works to both fund specialists and specialist nurses and campaign for more support. So just to explain a little bit more about MS and the symptoms to help your listeners, in MS, your immune system mistakenly attacks your central nervous system. So when the attack happens, the immune system targets the protective covering around your nerves. And this covering is called myelin. And the myelin is there to protect your nerves and to help messages travel along them smoothly. So you can understand that when the myelin is damaged, messages don't pass along your nerves as efficiently as they used to. So messages can get delayed or sometimes may not get through at all. And this is the reason for the symptoms that you can experience in MS. And these areas of damage are called lesions, and they cause the symptoms, as I said. So after an attack, your body is able, particularly in early MS, to repair itself to some extent. And it replaces the myelin, although it tends to be thinner. And so this myelin then, where the repair has happened, it's not as good as it was before. And so the messages don't travel as fast as they did before. And the brain also has the ability to reroute messages. So it can, in early MS, avoid that area of damage so that messages can still get through. But as more damage happens, then it gets more difficult to reroute those messages. And symptoms can vary from person to person and from day to day. So some of the most common symptoms around diagnosis are fatigue, sensory symptoms, so that's unusual feelings in your skin, like pins and needles, or numbness, or burning. Also in early MS, you can experience problems with your eyesight. Memory and thinking can be a problem, and as well as walking difficulties. But there are lots of other symptoms as well that people do experience, like muscle stiffness and spasms, bladder and bowel symptoms, and sexual difficulties. And I think, you know, what's important to remember is that a lot of these symptoms are invisible to other people. So you can't see if someone's got fatigue. You might not be able to see if they've got bladder problems, or perhaps problems with their memory. So a person with MS can look well, but actually can be feeling unwell. If your listeners want to find out more about MS, there's lots of information on the MS Trust website. There's a fact sheet called What is MS? And that website address is mstrust.org.uk.
Thank you for that, Sarah. I'm sure I've done some shows on MS before, and one of the things that came up was, I think, how films portray people with MS, which is not exactly accurate in reality, because 100%, you know, understand what you're saying. Sometimes you can't see, the symptoms are on a lesser level than maybe some other people. So they're not obvious. And, you know, people, you can't always tell if someone's got MS. And I think sometimes maybe what's been portrayed in maybe social media or films or wherever it might be shows a very exaggerated version of what MS might be. Do you find that as well? Or
yes, certainly when people are diagnosed, the people they might know themselves with MS, or that they've seen, as you say, on films, is someone in a wheelchair, someone with a lot of problems. And so it's also important to give them a positive message and a message of hope, because there are now a lot of really good treatments that really alter the disease course. And so we are able to keep people well for much longer while living with MS.
And you mentioned 130 people are newly diagnosed each week. Is that right? Am I correct? Did I take that on board correctly?
Yes, you did. Yes.
Gosh, that sounds like a lot of people to me.
Well, yes, it is a lot of people. and you know, it's one of the most common neurological conditions in young adults, and it's because of that. You know, these are adults often in the prime of their lives, so they're perhaps just developing their careers. They might be having families, and therefore, you know, it can be a devastating diagnosis to them.
Absolutely. Is it? Has it increased, you find, or was it lesser before, or is it more now?
I think it's just that we're able to diagnose people much sooner than we used to because of better, you know, we have MRI scans, and we know more about MS than we did 20 years ago.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for that, Sarah, for the insight and information around MS. David, can you tell us a bit more about, in terms of how many people are currently living with MS, and, you know, and why it's important to know this?
Yeah, well, at the moment, as Sarah says, there's about 130,000 people in the UK diagnosed who are living with multiple sclerosis at the moment. And those numbers, if you think about, 25 additional people every single weekday are being diagnosed. It's a really scary number. And for those people, they're going to be, on average, late 20s, early 30s, three women for every man. And they're going to have that disease for the rest of their life, and there isn't a cure for it. So it's a big change in their lives, really. So at the MS Trust, one of the things we try and do is to listen to patients' experience to help inform our support. So while many people perceive MS to be a condition that just affects mobility, the reality is that symptoms are hugely complex. So we've just done a recent survey. We asked about 2,000 people living with MS about their symptoms, their diagnosis, and their experience. And the MS Trust, we found that it's just life-changing. The mental health and MS report is really quite stunning. We published it back in May, and I think it gives one of the best insights I've ever read into the range and depth of challenging symptoms a person living with MS may experience. It highlights just how isolating and how damaging to mental health those symptoms can be. And I've just thrown a few stats at you from the report, if I can, Gavin. So if you think about people living with MS, just over 70%, 7 in every 10 are affected by fatigue, and that's major fatigue. It's not just feeling a bit tired, it's major fatigue. Going to the toilet, bladder and bowel problems are affecting 6 in 10, 61%. Major eyesight issues are affected by about 67%, so about two-thirds of people with MS. Skin sensations are about 83%. People having adverse pain issues, about 83% as well. And mobility issues, about 76%. So this disease is really life-changing. And one of the astonishing key findings we find is that almost all people living with MS, about 94%, will experience mental health problems. And around half of them will suffer from moderate to severe depression. I think that's just shocking. So mental health is affected not just by having a chronic health condition, but it is in fact a symptom of MS itself.
No, absolutely. And maybe you can both answer this. I mean, is there like services out there to support people with MS specifically and support in terms of supporting their mental health?
There are, to an extent. I'll throw to Sarah in a minute, but what we do as a trust, we can't provide that exact provision as a charity, but we know lots of good charities are doing some great work, and we signpost to them. What we hear from people living with multiple sclerosis, that while there are some support mechanisms both inside the NHS and from other charities as well, that perhaps there isn't enough provision, and some people find it hard to get support themselves.
No, of course. Sarah, did you want to come in there?
I would echo that certainly within the health service and in other organisations as well, there is not enough mental health support for people with MS. We really struggle to refer people to talking therapies. There are very long waiting lists for people to be seen, and you know they need to be seen at the time of identifying the problem, not 6 months later. So there certainly are not enough services to support people with their mental health.
No, of course. And I've spoken to people with MS before, and they've explained to me how they have to, if they're going out somewhere, they have to do a lot of planning around it because of, you know, because of the symptoms. And if they can't attend whatever it is that they need to go to, and that in itself makes them feel like it can demotivate the person. They feel less confident about going out. Have you heard these kind of things before?
Yes, certainly. You know, people with MS talk about having to pace their week. So if they've got perhaps a wedding to go to or a special occasion, they have to have a really quiet day either side of that to be able to have enough energy to cope with the day in hand. Traveling to work can be a problem because particularly in areas where people have to commute on busy trains or buses, perhaps they have to stand to get to work. That in itself is very fatiguing before they've even got to work to start their jobs. So people do have to, people with bladder problems, if you ask someone with a bladder problem, they will tell you where all the local public toilets are in their area because they can't go out without knowing where they are. So people do have to adapt their lives whilst living with MS.
Absolutely. We're just going to a quick ad break and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
So David and Sarah, thank you very much for that insight into the discussion we've had so far around multiple sclerosis. Sarah, what needs to change, do you think, to help the public and health professionals better understand these complex MS symptoms?
I think it's very important that healthcare professionals are better supported to enhance their understanding and ability to assist people with MS. For example, neurology teams need to be better trained in mental health awareness and support. I think we also need to see an improvement in service provision across the country and the creation of more specialist roles to help people with MS manage their day-to-day lives. MS nurses in many parts of the UK are not able to provide the level of care and support and education that they would like to due to large caseloads. And, you know, there are many ways that MS nurses can help people with MS, adjusting to their diagnosis, consider complicated treatment options, manage their symptoms and help them to learn to live well with what is a very unpredictable condition. But that is very difficult for a lot of MS nurses to do well because they have such large caseloads. And there are, you know, some places in the UK where there's no access to an MS nurse. And therefore, I think more investment is needed to resolve that problem.
Absolutely. It sounds like maybe more training for health professionals as well might be beneficial.
Certainly. Training for all levels, not just for the specialists, but people working in general practice, other healthcare professionals as well, to raise their awareness of MS and the symptoms that can occur.
Maybe some online services as well. I don't know if there's any online. Is there anything online as well that people can watch? And I'm sure there's information that people can read on the internet. I'm not sure. I'm just kind of thrown out there because I've heard of other people that speak about MS and saying these things on the internet as well and that kind of thing.
Yeah, there are some really good resources on the internet, and there's some courses and webinars and things available for healthcare professionals to watch. And obviously, the MS Trust has got a wealth of information on their website that is good for healthcare professionals as well as people and carers of people with MS.
But if people aren't online, what they can always do as well, Gavin, is they can ring our helpline, which is on 0800 032 3839, and our experts on the end of that phone will be able to guide people where they'll be able to find some of that best support. So we're always happy to do that.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you for that, David. Thank you. And David, actually, the question goes to you as well. I mean, you know, in terms of what is the MS Trust doing at the moment to maybe help with more public and health awareness of professionals?
Yeah, well, one of the things, Gavin, we're doing is we're really banging the drum, and probably more this year alongside some of the other charities. So in July, for example, the MS Trust, along with five other MS charities, presented some key, what we're seeing as key policy recommendations for change to the Government Minister for Disabled People at Health and Work. So that's Tom Pursglove. And there's three particular recommendations. One you just mentioned yourself. Well, one is we think there should be an NHS neurological conditions mental health pathway. So people with MS access get access to proper and appropriate mental health support. We think there should be a new mental health training package for the healthcare professionals working with people with MS, and annual MS review appointments should be happening to cover all of a person's need, including mental health and cognitive needs as well. But beyond policy and helping with access to information to support MS patients, one of the many ways we feel that the MS Trust works to make a difference is to pay for additional MS nurses and champions across the NHS. So these MS specialists help support patients and educate health professionals to understand the complex condition. So at the moment, over 100,000 of those 130,000 people with MS in the UK live in areas where there are not enough MS nurses to look after everyone. So the MS Trust is working with the NHS to pay for new nurses in the areas that need the most, and to ensure that people with MS have the care and support that they need. So the MS Trust MS Specialist Nurse Programme offers a package of support to participating NHS MS teams, where we'll pay for probably 80% of the cost for the first 15 months. We'll provide training, so we'll transform a nurse into an MS Specialist Nurse through our foundation training. We'll provide mentorship for the pulse holder for the first 15 or 18 months. And we'll also provide support for the whole MS team in improving and developing the service, and then collecting data about the service using the tools based on those that we've developed over the last 5 years or so. And we've also worked to create and support something called an advanced MS champion. And we've rolled those out up and down the UK in response to what we think is an unmet need. So there are specialist role working as a member of the team and focusing on care for people living with advanced MS.
That's fantastic. So there's a lot going on basically with the funding in that area.
A huge amount. Yeah. But it's really challenging because, you know, as Sarah said, there's 25 people every day who have been diagnosed with MS. So we think we're just about getting on top of the issue, and then the problem gets bigger and bigger and bigger.
Absolutely, no, of course. And I might be getting some of these things wrong. I know you mentioned July, the beginning of things have started to go off. In terms of, has there been any feedback around the mentorship and how things are going and developing staff, professionals and that kind of thing?
Not yet. We know the government is showing some interest in this at the moment and providing extra support, but we all know that the government takes a while to make some changes. So what we're doing is we're working alongside the MS Society and four other multiple sclerosis charities, and we're going to keep banging the table and banging the table until more mental health support is provided. But one of the things we're thinking about is in the training course that we provide, so when a nurse becomes an MS specialist nurse, we provide that training. So we're making some changes to that training course. So we're going to provide more mental health training, so some of those new MS nurses can provide some of that support themselves.
It sounds like Sarah would be a brilliant person to teach some of the nurses about specialism in MS. Wouldn't that be right, Sarah?
You're giving me a new job, are you?
I didn't mean to add to your role. But you, do you know what, Sarah? Your experience, and I can see you're inspired, and you're helping. It just would translate so wonderfully. I'm not saying anything, absolutely not. I'm just being cheeky. But you know, your knowledge, I think transferring that over to other people is invaluable.
Well, that's very kind of you to say. And it's, I think it has been a privilege working in this area of health for a long time now. As a nurse, one of the benefits is that you get to really know the people you're caring and supporting because you look after them for a long period of time. And so you develop a relationship with not just them, but the families as well. And that's a real privilege.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you get something from that as well, don't you? Knowing that you're making a difference, to someone's quality of life and that kind of thing. I'm sure. Would that be right?
Absolutely.
Kind of goes without saying. And it's probably why you went into this is the area in life you wanted to pursue, because you wanted to, help people and, try and do as best you can for society and the community. Would that be right?
That's quite a difficult question. I think I always knew I wanted to be a nurse. I think a lot of nurses would say that to you. But to find an area of nursing where I probably have made a difference, but also, as I said, it's about looking after someone, supporting someone for a number of years. It has been a real privilege, yes, and I really enjoyed that role.
Fantastic. We're just going to another quick ad break and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
David, how are these roles funded? Because there must be a lot of money that's obviously required to fund some of these new roles. How is that going to happen?
And that's quite a challenge, particularly for a boutique charity like the MS Trust, which doesn't receive a penny from the government or from the NHS. So one of the things we do, we have to show to people, to the generous people that support us, jumping out of planes, running marathons, baking cakes, that actually the money that they raise for us actually makes a real difference. So if you take the role that we've got at the moment, that we've developed at the charity, and it's called an Advanced MS Champion. So we think there's about a third of the people with MS are living with advanced multiple sclerosis. So it's about 45,000 people. For those people who know a bit about football, imagine Stamford Bridge, the home of Chelsea. Imagine that full. That's how many people are living with advanced MS. Now, in a nutshell, most of those people are not getting a huge amount of support from the NHS. The NHS and its support for people living with MS is generally brilliant, but for those people with advanced MS, it's not as good as it should be. So what we've done is we've created this champions role. It's supporting people with advanced MS, and we've created about six of these roles so far. So the role will cost about 50,000 or 60,000. We'll pay most of that sum, and we'll get the money in. But it's fascinating. So we'll pay about 80% of that for the first 15 months or so. And the deal we'll do with those different services is we say, if the role proves itself, then you've got to make that role permanent when we step away. And so far, of the six new roles we've developed, all six have been made permanent. So that's great. And the reason why is because there's a win-win with these advanced MS champions roles. So the reality is, you can imagine there are some people living with advanced MS, multiple sclerosis, and they've not necessarily been supported that much beforehand. So along comes an expert, holds their hand, guides and signposts them, perhaps into some existing services and maybe some new services. So the reality is the quality of life for those people is going to increase. Of course it is. But interestingly, what we're finding is these new roles are actually saving money for the NHS at the same time. And Gavin, I can hear you thinking already. I can see the cogs whirling. And you're saying, well, how's that going to work? Because if you're supporting more people, surely it's going to cost more money. But what we're finding is, previously what has happened is, because these people weren't getting much support, they were going to the GP when they didn't really need to. They were going to A&E when A&E couldn't really support them, and they were being admitted to hospital when that wasn't really appropriate. So overall, for each of these champions that we've developed, we've found we're saving the NHS about £333,000 per role per year. It's absolutely massive. So overall, in the last 2 years, the MS Trust has saved the NHS about £2.8 million and at the same time increased the quality of life for some people living with multiple sclerosis. That's why I get out of bed in the morning.
And I think that's a, you know, what a motivation. That's absolutely brilliant motivation to get out of bed, you know, just to kind of know that you're helping on a large scale like this, you know?
Yeah, it's my colleagues. We've got 30 members of staff at the Trust. We've got some absolutely brilliant people. They go the extra mile again and again and again, and they really do make a difference. But the reality is, the challenge is one of the things that keeps me awake at night is we provided champions in six areas. Tomorrow morning, I'm flying to Tayside in Scotland to unveil the next advanced MS champion. I wish every person living with advanced MS had access to an advanced MS champion. At the moment, we haven't got enough money to do that. So that's one of the challenges for me going forward.
Absolutely. Sounds brilliant. This might be a question for both of you, but can people be misdiagnosed with MS as well?
Well, shall I answer that, Gavin? Certainly, because the symptoms are complex, there's not one test that, you know, there's not a blood test that says, oh, yes, you've got MS. People are diagnosed from taking a history of their symptoms, examination, ruling out other conditions, and then an MRI scan to look at their brain and spinal cord. So in some circumstances, there is misdiagnosis, or more common perhaps is delays in diagnosis, because they might go to the GP a number of times with symptoms before they are referred on to see a neurologist, or they may be referred to see another sort of specialist. And obviously, if they're delayed in being diagnosed, then that also means a delay in treatment starting for their MS. And the MS Trust estimates that up to 20% of people are misdiagnosed before they discover they have MS. There was a recent patient survey we've just mentioned earlier on showed that one in two people, so just over 50%, 52% of people waited 3 years or more for a diagnosis.
Gosh, that's it. Did you say 3 years?
Up to 3 years, yes.
Because in my mind, then what happens is that you've got people which are, in the end, there's people that are, they may be in later stages of the condition because of the delay in actually diagnosing correctly. Would that be right?
Probably not in their later stages, because, you know, you have MS for your lifetime. But quite often, someone perhaps can have an optic neuritis, so that's a problem with one of the nerve that supplies the vision to your eye. And that can happen. And on its own, it's just an isolated symptom. It can happen in other conditions as well. And then perhaps, you know, a few years later, they have a bit of numbness in their leg for a few days, and it goes away again. They might see someone about it, but they might not. And so that in itself can delay the diagnosis happening, because it may not be until the second or third event before they either themselves go to the GP, or the GP thinks, I wonder what's going on here, and refers them on.
Of course. And I'm sure you've spoken to some people that have about the experiences of going through those stages of being diagnosed, which must be absolutely traumatic and worrying for the person.
Well, normally, by the time I see them, they've actually had their diagnosis, but they will tell you, you know, their story of how their diagnosis happened. And I think David's probably got some more examples, have you, David, from people that you've interviewed at the MS Trust.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's interesting, Gavin, that the number of people I've spoken to, it's an awful disease. And, you know, you'd think when people are told they've got it and they're going to have it for the rest of their life and there's no cure, that they'd be in bits. But some of them have said, look, they've had these symptoms for so long, and sometimes they don't feel that they've been believed, that actually when they're told that they've got something and definitively, they actually say they're actually quite relieved, although it is a bit of a shock afterwards. But I'll give you an example of one of our supporters, the MS Trust supporters. Let's call her Jane. It's not her real name, but she shared with us how she had to wait 16 years for a diagnosis. Now, that's not common. But she was going to A&E with pain, problems walking and moving, and they were just dismissed. And there was a false assumption that she was on drugs when she wasn't. I've heard time and again, particularly with younger people, as I've said to you, people tend to be diagnosed in the late 20s, early 30s. And sometimes people can wrongly be assumed that their symptoms were alcohol related. And then another supporter shared with me that the lack of joined up thinking about the connection between her symptoms resulted in probably what she thought were about 5 years of unnecessary and invasive investigation. And what she said was a very dark period for her, you know, mentally, really. So it's hard. I absolutely get it for the health specialist, because it's not like you just do a blood test and gather it. You know, in the search for a diagnosis, she was to and fro with 7 different specialists: feet, bowels, physiotherapists, spine specialists. And she shared with us, you know, she said it was humiliating and degrading, the physical investigation, particularly around the bowel problems she was suffering. Now, we know that GPs can't know all there is to know about multiple sclerosis, but sometimes we encourage GPs to think about MS sooner rather than later. You know, Sarah and I have said to you today, you know, when you've got 25 people a day being diagnosed, that's quite a big number, really. Probably as many people as there are with Parkinson's, but Parkinson's is much more commonly known about. So what we're trying to do is fly the flag for multiple sclerosis so more people are aware about it going forward.
Mm, absolutely. And that's awful, you know, just the kind of what people go through to be diagnosed. And 16 years, people can actually wait sometimes that long to be diagnosed.
Yeah, and it can be. But then I was talking to a neurologist a couple of months ago, and he was telling me off the back of the pandemic, waiting lists in this area have gone up because the services themselves are running to catch up and running really to bring those waiting lists down, working very, very hard. But one neurologist was telling me that the waiting list to see him was, the average waiting list was now over a year, which is awful anyway, when you've got this horrible, or shall we say, the suspected disease hanging over you. But he said the challenge is when there's a delay in diagnosing someone, until they're being diagnosed, there's no cure for MS, but there are a number of treatments called disease-modifying treatments, which will perhaps stabilize the MS for on average about 7 years. Now, the important thing is they will stabilize some of those symptoms, but more importantly, they'll postpone the day of disability. So this neurologist was really worried that by delays for people knowing whether or not they've got MS, they weren't getting access to the drug, so they're effectively becoming more disabled more quickly. So it can be quite distressing for both the person living with suspected MS, but also the health specialists at the same time.
Of course, yeah, it's both ways. And, you know, and what you mentioned early on made sense, because some people are thinking, oh gosh, what's wrong with me? I just wish I knew what was wrong with me. And then they get a diagnosis and they might well feel, at least now I know. Yeah. So I can try and move forwards, even though it's not something the person, you know, they might not want to, that's not something they want to hear. But unfortunately, but at least they've got a diagnosis and they can move forwards with treatment, you know.
Absolutely. And, you know, you're certain in your view, and say many of the specialist services up and down the country are absolutely brilliant. We've got some of the best people in the world actually operating in the UK in particular. So, you know, once people know and they get access to some of these great neurologists, the great specialist MS nurses like Sarah, I think it couldn't be much better than that, really. And now there's almost 20 disease-modifying treatments. Well, whether they're not a cure, that will stabilize some of the symptoms. So while things aren't perfect, they're much better than they were even 10 years ago.
Brilliant. And that's good to hear. David, how is the MS Trust helping people with complex symptoms?
Well, we're doing our best. As well as providing specialist support, we also act as an information hub, really, with detailed information and coping with all kinds of symptoms and then sharing personal stories with tips and words of encouragement. You know, as Sarah and I have said, an MS diagnosis, it can actually be devastating for both people with MS and their loved ones as well. So the Trust supports everyone affected by MS from the moment of diagnosis and then throughout their journey, which is going to be throughout their lives. So diagnosis can result in people feeling lost, lonely, and uncertain of their future. But the support from charities like the MS Trust means that those with MS are not left to deal with it alone. So one of the things we try and do is we try and help answer questions about MS. So after a diagnosis, there may be questions about symptoms or information needed on the different MS drugs and treatments. So we try and make sure that the friendly and knowledgeable inquiries team, our helpline, can answer all of these questions. So they can be contacted in a variety of ways, and the service is confidential. And if people can't find the answer, they will signpost to someone who can. So, and we also provide at the MS Trust award-winning information to help patients and their families, but also to support health professionals too. So whenever anybody is with MS, living with MS, the MS Trust has an award-winning information service when it's needed. And we aim to provide the best help and support so this living with MS can take control and live a life with MS and not defined by MS. So this includes practical, reliable, evidence-based information, online, in print, and in video, covering a whole range of topics from lifestyle tips to MS symptoms, explaining MS to kids as well, to drugs and to treatments. So we're committed at the Trust to ensuring everyone with MS can access the treatments and services that they need and that they deserve. And by seeking the views of people living with MS and working collaboratively with MS charities, the NHS and other decision makers to influence change, we can ensure that the voice of the MS community is always heard loud and clear when it comes to the decisions that affect them. And I'm proud to say that since 2000, the Trust has provided essential training and development for every new MS specialist nurse in the UK. And we also support the wider MS team with the residential training, study days, and the biggest annual conference for MS professionals in the UK. And as well as helping to fund and pay for additional MS nurses in the NHS, the Trust also helps to fund these specialist champions too, to provide dedicated support for those with MS, advanced MS. And we think there are about 40,000 people living with advanced MS up and down the country. It can have a devastating impact, and symptoms are complex and debilitating. So our research has found that many people with advanced MS report losing contact with the specialist services as their condition gets worse, and they have to rely on informal care from family and friends, and sometimes having to manage that condition alone, which must be awful. So our Champions program pays for additional specialist champions across the UK to provide guidance, support, and coordinated care for the people who need it most. And of course, I've already mentioned the important policy and campaigning work that we do on behalf of the charity too.
What an invaluable service that you're providing, honestly. I mean, I think it's fantastic. I mean, if people are struggling with their symptoms or unsure, where they turn to next, what can they do?
Well, I think that probably the first thing they should do is, you know, they can always ring our helpline. So our helpline is open 5 days a week from 9 till 5. So we provide people living with MS and their families trusted information on all aspects of life with multiple sclerosis. So we can signpost to people to services that might help support them and provide practical information. We understand that there are many different symptoms, choices and challenges. So probably the best thing for people to do is either to ring the number, the helpline, which is 0800 032 3839, or if they'd rather, they can email us at ask@mstrust.org.uk, and they can, one way or another, either offline or online, they can have a confidential conversation, and we perhaps give them some tips about where they can go and what they can do. But we can't tell people whether they've got MS or not. That's down to the neurologists alone, supported by specialist MS nurses like Sarah.
Fantastic. And David, how can people support the MS Trust?
Well, we would say, you know, we rely on people. As I say, we don't get any money from the government. We don't get any people from the NHS. So when people sometimes run London marathons for us, they bake cakes, they jump out of planes. Earliest this year, I cycled from London to Paris. I raised about 8,000 quid for the MS Trust. So that's helped pay for an additional MS nurse. So I would say the best thing to do if somebody wants to support us is to have a look at our website at mstrust.org.uk, and they'll see lots of different things that they can do on there, and we'll make sure, I promise, that we'll make the best use of that money possible.
David, Sarah, what you're both doing is amazing, honestly, and the trust sounds like it's doing well, and it's going to do really well. I'm sure of it, because the amount of support and the future that, you know, that the objectives that are held and what you want to achieve, I think is fantastic. You know, thank you both for today. Thank you very much for coming today. Really appreciate your time.
And thank you for having us, Kevin. Thank you for us, to giving us the opportunity about the great work that me and my colleagues are doing, and to highlight the brilliant work that people like Sarah are doing across MS services across the country.
Absolutely.
No, thank you very much, Gavin.
Sarah, no problem. And you know, you can find me at GavinJ417 on Instagram. And that's to our listeners. Take care.